All right, so I'm sitting here with David Tyerman, and David, I'm really excited to be here today with you. We have a great topic ahead of us, and I know we're going to have a super discussion on this. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
So let's jump right in, because, you know, this whole idea of creating an emotional connection with the audience, I'm really intrigued by that. And I'm curious, you know, what does that mean, and why is that important when it comes to freelancers and solopreneurs to create that connection?
You know, last night I was watching American Idol, and you've got all these contestants, and when they pan that camera to all the people who show up, there's literally thousands and thousands of people who are hoping to get their moment of fame and maybe become the American Idol. And you see this sea of people, and how could you possibly choose one of those people? But then, once in a while, one of the candidates gets a chance to have a little video reel made. There might be something unique about them. They might have an interesting story. And they do a little story about where they came from, what's important to them, what they care about, etc., etc. And all of a sudden, you're rooting for that person. So that's that really right there, that what American Idol are doing, are creating an emotional connection between us, the audience, and that candidate. They're standing out head and shoulders from that sea of others who we just, it seems like a blur, because now we know that person. Now we've got, or almost we're invested in that person being successful. And sometimes they'll do a little skit on a person, and you're like, God, I hope they can sing. And then they sing, and they can't. And
you feel really bad.
But the thing is, it, in business, I take it for granted that people are going to do what they can to be good at what they do. I take that for granted because I can't help them. I can't. All I can say is just do your best to be the best at what you do. But I meet people all the time who are excellent at what they do, but they feel invisible. They feel overlooked, or they realize that company down the street got the business and they know they're better, so why didn't they get it? Mm-hmm. And so we have to put what we do, we have to put our products or services aside and understand what's involved in creating that emotional connection. Because that's the secret to sales and the secret to building your brand. And why would we build a brand? We'd build a brand to improve our business. Mm-hmm. The secret to all of it is creating an emotional connection with the marketplace.
So I'm curious then, because you mentioned the word brand. And,
yep. You
know, I wonder, well, first of all, how closely tied is this to creating a brand? And second of all, I'm curious, when it comes to a solo business, a solopreneur, consultant, freelancer, do we need a brand?
I'm going to ask you a question,
mm-hmm.
and I'm asking you this question, and everybody who's listening, I'm asking everybody this question. So when you were a young boy, can you tell me one of the very first brands that you used to beg from your parents or your grandparents or whoever? It could be toys, it could be candy, it could be a TV show. What was it that you just had to have?
Oh, that's a good question. I thought of, before you even said it, I thought of candy. I thought of Mars, M&M, for example.
M&M's. Okay, so I speak in front of audiences quite regularly, and so when I ask this question, I get all sorts of answers, from Lego to Barbie dolls to Kit Kats. Once there was this lady, and she goes, Marlboro Lights. And I was like, no, when you were a little girl. She goes, yeah, Marlboro Lights. And I was like, okay. So the thing is,
she was Irish.
I'm just going to mention mine, and most people might not have heard of mine, but the brand I just loved when I was a kid is called Branston Pickle. And if you've been to Britain, you might have seen it. It's really it's a relish. And you have it with cheese, you have it with sandwiches, you have it with salads, you have it with pies. You can have it with pretty much anything, and people do have it with all sorts of different meals. And there's a jingle that goes with that product, and they sing, bring out the Branston. And so as kids, we would sit at the dinner table and sing to Mum, bring out the Branston, and she'd bring out the Branston. So one day, we ran out of Branston. So Mum calls Dad at the office and says, please pick up some Branston on the way home. So, of course, he forgets. And as he's just getting close to the house, he realizes, damn it, I forgot the Branston. So he stops at the local neighborhood store. They don't have Branston, so he bought a generic brand. Comes home with a paper bag, and we're all sitting at the table because we didn't ever have dinner before Dad got home. And what does he pull out? It might as well have been a cow pat. You know, it's like, where's the Branston? Well, they didn't have any. And we're like, no. And we're really upset. And so the point of me sharing that story is, for everybody who chose a brand, whatever it was, from and looking at mine, in an ocean of relish choices, I knew that there was one relish I just had to have. Out of all the relishes, and you can go to supermarkets and see hundreds of different types of relish in some delicatessens. So we've all known, every single one of us, since we were children, that in a sea of choices, there was one that we truly wanted. For you, it was M&M's. Out of a sea of candy choices. Therefore, by default, if you know that there was that one you wanted, it's therefore possible to stand out as the one that your customers want.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to start from that point of view of realizing, well, what goes into that? What do we have to do to stand out as that one? The first thing we have to do is understand it's absolutely doable. And as a solopreneur, as someone who came to the States with a suitcase and really an American dream, I'm here to say you do not – building a brand isn't just for the big boys. It's not just for people with very deep pockets. I've built my own very successful brands and separated myself from all the competitors so that my customers knew I need David's company. I need what they've got because we were totally differentiated. And that's what the name of the game is separating ourselves from all others and presenting ourselves at our most valuable and connecting emotionally from that point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the kind of concept.
And you're saying that, you know, when I think of brand, and I think a lot of people listening, you know, we have a lot of marketers here at the Academy, and the term brand is synonymous with, you know, consumer products.
Yes.
And there's been this argument going on for years that, well, if you're either a business-to-business company or a solopreneur, forget about developing a brand because what it takes to develop a brand, you know, look at Coke, Apple, and so forth, is years and years and billions of dollars
right. Of
effort to create that impression.
Well,
so,
you know, without being too cheeky, Ed, I would say let's flush that thought down the toilet for a second because you're right. All of us can walk into Sears and Best Buy and see a sign that says, we carry the best brands here. And so for most people, most consumers, the word brand really means that you could replace the word brand with the word type. What type of car did you get? What brand of car did you get? What type of washing machine? Did you get a Whirlpool? Did you get an LG? It just means what type to many people. And then that type comes with certain feelings and ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But building a brand is a very different thing. And most people, they might think they know what a brand is, but most people don't. And there's some myths out there in what a brand is. I've had people come up to me saying, well, David, I have a brand. Look, I have a logo. Look, I have a tagline or a slogan. And that isn't a brand. So if I might, let me share something that 85% of solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, and big businesses don't know about creating a successful brand. I'm going to share with you the distinction between what we call branding and brand identity. So we'll start with branding because that's what most people are familiar with. Branding, if you buy products, which we all do, branding is the packaging.
Mm-hmm.
Branding is also your website. Branding is all of your social media. Branding even includes the voicemail message you have on your phone. It includes any videos you post on your website or in social media or whatever, business cards, brochures. So even if there was a kid down the street who decides to do a yard service in the holidays and they, and that child created a flyer saying yard service available, that's branding. So anything that we do as a business being to try to get the attention of customers or potential customers is called branding. Mm-hmm. And most businesses and most people, they jump into their branding without being clear about their brand identity. And the secret to all of this is understanding your brand identity. So brand identity is actually bigger and more important. No matter how great your product or service is that you sell,
mm-hmm.
your brand identity is more important. It's who you are. It's what you represent. It's what you care about. It's who you honor, who your market is. So we have to get really clear about our brand identity before we can even have successful branding. So most people, if you think of it as branding is the icing on the cake,
mm-hmm.
most people get really focused on the icing, but brand identity is the cake. And so I kind of joke, how could you put icing on a cake when you haven't made the cake yet?
Yeah.
We need to be really clear about the cake. What's your brand identity? What makes you different? And so ultimately, a brand is what makes you unique and valuable, most unique and valuable, in the hearts and minds, eyes of your customers,
mm-hmm.
of your audience. It's not about having, you know, 50 million to put into advertising. It's,
gotcha.
It's connecting with your customers, knowing who you are and what you represent, and knowing what you think is most important to them. And it really comes back to things like your story, your point of view, what you care about, why you are doing this, things mm-hmm. things along those lines.
You know, so maybe let's go there, because I really like where you're going with this, and I can definitely, now that I'm hearing you, this really resonates, and I can see the power of a prospect of mine coming across my website, for example, and really understanding what I stand for. So if I were to go through this process, I mean, what would be maybe some steps I could take to start thinking through my brand identity?
Okay, well, you know, I think that maybe, let me just share a little bit about how I got to this place, about you know, because nobody's born knowing how to build a brand.
Mm-hmm.
It's a learned process. And so I just want to briefly tell, because I'm from England, I came to the United States with a suitcase 25 years ago. So my story kind of starts the way my granny used to tell me stories. It starts once upon a time and in a land far, far away, because I live in Hawaii, and my story started in Huntington Beach in Orange County. And one day I discovered I was down to my last $20 in the whole world. And I had something worse than bad credit. I had no credit. I had no credit cards, no overdraft facility, no friendly bank manager. And I'd been in the United States for 6 months. And my big idea, and I'd come here, like I said, with a suitcase, a dream, a business partner. We had about $5,000 between us. And our big idea was to buy antiques and vintage things in England and bring them to the United States and sell them here the way that people sell Tupperware. So our idea was antique parties in people's homes. And I was so excited about my plan, because to me it was a big adventure to get away from this boring corporate job in London to live this dream. So I told everybody. I told my parents and my grandparents and my brothers and my sister and my uncles and my aunts, everybody. And every single person I told said, David, that's a crap idea. And so after 6 months in the United States, and we're down to our last 20, I was proving them right, and I was really, really concerned. It was a Tuesday. I put that $20 bill on the kitchen table, and we sat staring at it. And after a while, I turned to my business partner, and I was like, do you have any ideas? And he said, no, do you? Well, I said, it's Tuesday, and there's that bar on Main Street, and on Tuesday nights, they do all the beer you can drink for $7. And they also do all the nachos and cheese you can eat for $2.99, so let's go out. So, and off we went. We slapped down the 20 on the bar. We started drinking beer. We started talking. It was one of the most important nights of my life, really. I didn't know it at the time. We talked about so many things, our whole adventure, all the people who tried to help us, and there'd been a few people who tried to help us, or the people who tried to rip us off, and there have been a lot, and we were very naive, and a lot of them had succeeded. And we talked, and then I turned to the barmaid, and I said, you know what, we just spent our last $20 in the whole world in here. And she said, why? This place sucks. I'm like, well, it's because it's the only place we could afford. So she said, oh, I better buy you a shot. And so she started pouring shots for us. And she started telling the other bartenders, these two guys have just spent their last 20 in the whole world in here. And then they started chatting with us, and then they started telling some of the locals. And we had this amazing night of telling our stories and our adventures over the last few months. And then at the end of the night, I remember I cried because I couldn't tip them. And the girl we'd been talking to mostly, she goes, don't worry, you guys are great. And what an amazing adventure you've had so far. You're just broke, that's all. And she goes, guess what? Everybody behind this bar's broke. Most of the people in the bar are broke. And I was like, you're right. I'm having a great time. And actually down the bar there was a guy, and he owned a limousine company, and he drove us home in the back of his limousine. And I'll never forget it because, like, I love this life, and I love doing what I'm doing. And so I went to bed, passed out, and it was the next morning when I woke up. That was the day I'd been dreading, and that was being penniless, and I woke up penniless. But instead of feeling miserable, actually I was relieved. And I remember two eyes, two ears, a nose. I'm alive, and I felt hope. And I suddenly realized that I was truly committed, because I was not going to go back a failure to England. So I jumped out of bed, went to the kitchen. There's my business partner. He looked like he'd been beaten up. He looked like a broken man. And I said, you know something? I have no clue how, but somehow, some way, I'm going to make this work, because I can't go back. It's going to happen. And he looked at me and goes, okay, I'm going to stay. And so now I'm just going to fast forward really quickly, because we started off as these so-called antique dealers. And you know what we were doing? We had all this vision, but as soon as we started thinking, well, how do antique dealers behave? What are we supposed to do? How do antique dealers do business? And we started trying to emulate what it meant, in our opinion, to be an antique dealer. But I'm going to fast forward 7 years, because 7 years later, we were now in San Francisco. We were multi-millionaires, but that's, you know, it's really important, but we were doing business with some of the best-known brands on the planet. Polo, Ralph Lauren, Nike, Tommy Hilfiger, Nautica, Macy's, Nordstrom, Land Rover, Citibank. And when I mention Polo, for example, everybody who's ever even just walked past the Polo has seen what we did. All those old suitcases and trunks, sailboats, rugs that say Polo, dumbbells, you name it. Everything that visually makes the Polo brand look the way it's supposed to be, we did. And we supplied every Polo store on the planet, Polo North America, Polo Japan, Polo Europe. And our journey of doing this had us on CNN, the front page of the Wall Street Journal, on over 100 TV shows and magazines and newspapers, not for being successful, but for how we went about doing this. Because what dawned on us one day, as we were trying to sell our antiques, and we sold some antiques to Macy's, and the buyer kept saying, well, we're going to use these items to differentiate the menswear area, we're going to use these other items to differentiate the bedding department, and he kept on saying this word, differentiate. And this light bulb went off, and I realized, they're not buying antiques. They're buying differentiation. I'm helping them build a brand. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a brand. I'm just any old antique dealer. So we started looking at, who are we? What are we about? What do we care about? What do our customers really need? Because they weren't buying antiques, like I said. They were buying a story. So what we ultimately did was transition. We built our own brand. We were famous in our market. We were very well known in that world of visual branding for retailers. So we had a world-famous brand, and we were known. Our storyline, really, was that we were on an adventure. We were going somewhere, and we didn't take ourselves too seriously. We took business seriously, but we didn't take ourselves too seriously, and we were here to help our customers tell their brand story the best way possible. Mm-hmm. That differentiated us from all the other companies trying to sell antiques
Because they're just they're selling a commodity, in other words.
They were selling a product and a commodity. We were selling an idea. So as I became more and more successful, people would ask me to speak around town and ask me, how do you build a brand and how do you help these big brands? So I started creating the steps.
Mm-hmm.
And I got so into it, and I finally realized my true love are entrepreneurs just like me. So I sold Propaganda in 2000 to specialize in helping people take the steps they need to take, just like I did, to build a brand that truly that connects on an emotional level with my market, because we're transcending the products and services we were selling. Because, you know, I was broke selling antiques. And then I became a multimillionaire selling antiques. So it wasn't the antiques that changed. It was the brand I built. It was the relationship. It was the meaning that changed everything. And that's what everybody can do. And that's why, especially freelancers, solopreneurs, we can get so caught up in what we do instead of what we represent, what we care about.
What, you know, and that's powerful. I mean, that's an amazing story. And then the great thing about what you just shared, David, is that all of us have a story. You know, this what you did is pretty remarkable. But when people sit down and think about it, because as you're telling the story, I'm thinking, you know what? I mean, mine is dramatic in a different way, right? And
uh-huh.
I think everyone has something to share that really speaks to who they are, what they care about, when they stand for. And I guess that's really the key, right?
It's a vital part of the process, absolutely.
So let's talk about how we can, you know, how do you do that? How do you go about kind of gathering those stories and ideas and communicating in a way that's going to resonate with a prospect?
Okay, so everybody who is taking notes, make sure you've got your pad and your pen right now, because these are the. I'm going to give you three questions to answer,
mm-hmm.
and these are the questions Steve Jobs answered. By the way, these are the questions that people who are truly committed to building a brand. And by the way, just going off on a little tangent here, if you ever want to see the distinction between a life with a brand and without a brand, go to a swap meet, look at all the vendors. And my kind of tongue-in-cheek joke is, vending is for vending machines. We need to be brand builders. We need to be committed. So it starts with intention. I'm not a vendor, I'm a brand builder. Because building a brand is the most valuable thing you can do for yourself, because your brand is what attracts the business. There's a clothing company, some people will have heard of them, some won't. I've never worked with them, but they're called Tap Out. And Tap Out started as a T-shirt vendor, and in their first year of business, they did $30,000 in sales. But they built a brand. They specialize in the cage fighting type of arena. And they got really clear about their point of view, what they cared about, what they stood for. They sold their company 10 years later for $200 million, I think. So by being really clear, they weren't trying to sell T-shirts. They were building a brand. And so there's a famous guy from Joe Boxer, the guy that founded Joe Boxer, Nick Graham, and he has a quote, which is fantastic. His title used to be Chief Underpants Officer, so he was very tongue-in-cheek. And he says, your brand is the theme park, and your product is the souvenir. And you must write that down, because when you see it like that, when you go to Disney, if those of you like Disney, who doesn't want to take a souvenir home?
Yeah.
And so when you get clear about your brand, what you stand for, what you represent, your products do sell themselves. I'm not saying you don't have to have marketing plans and sales systems, but the brand is what makes all the difference. And one single individual can have a brand. Solopreneurs need a brand, because otherwise we're invisible. We become the default brand, and that's what I call it. The more we emulate how things are done in our own industry, the more invisible we become.
Mm-hmm.
So here are the questions. The first question is, who are you? easy for me to ask, sometimes takes a little time to answer. So don't expect to have all the perfect answers the first time you write down your answer. Give yourself a little time. But who are you? Next question. What do you stand for? This is really important. If you think about politicians, for example, or think about different pop stars that you might like, or well-known people like Oprah or whatever, different people have got different things that they stand for. What do you stand for?
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what I stand for. My tagline says it, fight brand conformity. I get so bored by conformity. I've always rebelled against conformity. I just don't like it. I hate doing what I'm told. I can't stand it. And so I fight brand conformity. That's what I stand for. That's one of the things I stand for. So that's the second question.
And by the way, David, on that second question, probably yes. Very similar to the first question, it could be quite a few things. It could be paragraph form. It could be a bunch of items that you just start jotting down.
Yes, absolutely. Just bullet point your answers.
Mm-hmm.
It's to start getting an idea that I am different from everybody else. This is how you start defining what makes you unique and valuable. So just think, if you were the Ritz-Carlton versus Motel 6, they're both successful organizations, but they're very different when they talk about who are they and what do they stand for.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The third question is really important as well. All three are vitally important. The third question is, who do you honor? Who do you honor? The number of times I see people trying to please everybody, and it's just never going to work. You've got to be clear about who you really care about. Who do you really want to do business with? If you could imagine the line of people at your actual door, whether even if you work out of your bedroom, customers lining up, and you open the door, who are you going to say, oh, no, I don't want to work with you?
Yeah.
We've got to be clear about who we don't want to work with as much as well. Oh, my goodness, you're exactly who I want to work with. I love working with people with your points of view and your beliefs and your types of personality. Be clear about who you honor, because it really will help you own your brand. We are not trying to please everybody. We are here to honor the customers we designed our business around. And a secret, a clue here, is that most businesses, most individuals are looking to honor people who are similar to them. So what I mean by that is, here I am, this guy who came from England, who I learned about America so long ago, and I was very inspired by the brand America, a place where you could truly be successful if you tried hard enough. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness did it for me. I packed my bags and came a long way away from my family to get brand America. So we've got to be clear about what it is that inspired you. Like for me, I came here and I was just hungry. I needed to know, I'm hungry, I'm driven, but what steps do I take? And actually for me, people like Anthony Robbins helped me. Mm-hmm. I read his books and bought a couple of programs. Tom Hopkins, the sales expert. So his customers were people just like me who wanted to know how. And so I honor people like me who are driven, they're motivated, they want to help people, they want to change the world, they just need to know the steps to get the brand that they've always wanted. And sometimes, like you said, people think, oh, brand, but what they really want, they might not know it's a brand, but what they really want, they want to stand apart from everybody else. They don't want to be feeling overwhelmed by this feeling of competition.
At the end of the day, that's really what matters.
It is. And I've never believed in competition. Even in dating, I would always be like, listen, I'm not competing with anybody. If you don't want me, forget it.
Yeah, you're one of a kind. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm one of a kind, and it's like, I need to make sure I'm able to represent who I am and not be trying to please that person and pretend I'm something I'm not. Own it. Get clear about who you are and then own it, because there's an ocean of people waiting to do business with you when you inspire them.
So, David, I guess to take that one step further, because I really
yes.
I love those three questions, by the
yes.
way. I would assume that people should really take their time with this. I mean, I know I wrote these down, and this is something that I would want to spend you know, several afternoons on. You know, get it out on paper, and then I need to put it away, come back to it. But I guess the next question, and I know this could go on for a while, but I guess as the next step from there, where should people start incorporating those messages and those ideas?
That's a great question. So I'm going to take us back to what we talked about earlier about the distinction between branding and brand identity. And on your piece of paper, if you imagine drawing a flat image of a cartwheel, so a circle, a big circle with a little circle in the middle that represents the hub, and then all the spokes. In the hub, if you were to write brand identity, and then each of the spokes are, we'll call them branding spokes. So one spoke could be your tagline, one spoke could be your website, another spoke could be your voicemail message. So first we have to get clear about our brand identity. Who are you? What do you stand for? What's important to you? Who do you honor? And then that's going to give you a clue about what you're trying to say, how you're trying, what kind of, what's your tagline that's going to engage people in the possibilities that they can expect when they work with you.
Mm-hmm.
So we first get clear about who we are. We get clear about our brand identity, and then we apply it through all of our branding spokes. And I'm going to give you a really silly example, Ed. The voicemail message. How many times have you made a call and you hear a message and it says something like, I'm either on the phone or away from my desk? we hear it every day.
Yes.
And so this is my joke. And for everybody who's listening, if you happen to have that message or something like it, here's my joke. In the whole history of you having that message, has anyone ever asked you when they actually got to speak with you, which one was it? Were you on the phone or away from your desk? It's driving me crazy. You know, this is the thing. Even your voicemail message is an opportunity to inspire people when you know what it is you need to ask them, when you know what it is you want to share without being all salesy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not telling you that if you have the right voicemail message, it's going to change everything and that's all you have to do. But I have landed business because of my voicemail messages over the years. So that's why I want you to really look at those branding spokes. When you are clear about your brand and what you stand for and what you care about, you're in a position to inspire people. And that's how you create an emotional connection, even including your voicemail message. And sometimes I'll call somebody and they have such a good voicemail message, I already know, oh, I can't wait to speak to this person. I can't wait to hear what they have to say. I think I want to work with this person. So the opportunities that we are missing by conforming, by doing what's expected, by doing the done thing, I'm here to say, look at where you are being just like the default brand in your industry and give yourself an opportunity to express your brand. Connect with your market differently. Don't just do Facebook posts just because everyone else is. Have a point of view. Don't just make boring. And how many times do we get newsletters that are so generic and boring, we're never going to read them? Dare have people that don't like what you're doing if they're not your customers.
Yeah.
Your mum doesn't have to like your brand. My mum doesn't like my brand. But I'm doing the right thing. If my mum doesn't like it, I'm onto a winner.
There you go. That's a good litmus test. No, that's fantastic. That makes a lot of sense. And you mentioned the Ritz-Carlton earlier. And my wife and I had an experience there recently. Took her there for her birthday. And I hadn't been there in years. And, man, I tell you what, the moment you set foot in that – actually, before you set foot in that place, at the valet, it is a whole different experience.
Right.
And you talk about the spokes. You're right. That's a good imagery because basically every single interaction they have with you is a spoke. And not just human to human, but, you know, the room. Everything in the room, the attention to detail – is so amazing, and it's all a reflection of what they stand for. So now that I'm listening to you, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and you know, I've enjoyed staying at the Ritz-Carlton, but I've also enjoyed staying at other less expensive properties who are clear about their brand too. So we don't have to be the Rolls-Royce in order to deliver a great, real, honest, authentic brand experience. One of my favorite brands is Virgin Atlantic, and they are not the most expensive airline out there, that they are one of the most successful airline brands ever in the history of aviation. So I take a lot of cues. I think Richard Branson is a genius. And if you ever get to fly Virgin, you'll experience something very different than the average everyday airlines. So when I say 85% of businesses don't understand, I'm including big companies like airlines. A lot of them, they've got a generic brand. They've got the default brand. They're looking over their shoulder at what everyone else is doing instead of looking to the vision of where they want to be and being true to who they really are.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out, because the whole idea is not here. We're not here to say that you have to be, you know, la creme de la creme in terms of...
Yeah, you can own being Motel 6, but do it, you know, it's like, I think of it sometimes when you go to a bar, for those who drink, and sometimes people order a vodka tonic, and that means they're going to get the well vodka. Mm-hmm. Or they might call their premium brand, I'll have a Grey Goose and tonic. So we've got to think, where are you, what kind of positioning do you want here?
Yeah. David, this has been fantastic. You really got me thinking about some of this stuff. And I had heard some of these concepts before, but what you've done a really good job of is kind of tie it all together and give us some sort of framework through where we can start thinking through this and actually putting it into practice. So thank you for that. And, you know, so our listeners who want to learn more about you, where can they go?
Okay, well, the first place I'm going to send everybody, I have a free webinar. We do it 3 times a week for the time being. It's going to be coming down soon, so I recommend going sooner rather than later. The best way to do it is to go to Facebook, actually. Facebook.com/ World Famous Company. And my company is called World Famous Company. And on my World Famous Company page, you'll see a big button that says free webinar, and then you can go and sign up for one of my free webinars. My website, and we have actually been going through our own rebranding process ourselves, so we have a brand spanking new website going up very soon, and the website is worldfamouscompany.com. But if you want the free webinar, and it's packed with steps so that you can start getting your teeth into creating your brand and getting clear about what makes you unique and valuable in your market immediately. So that's best reached through Facebook, World Famous Company page.
Perfect. Well, David, thanks again. It was real a pleasure having you here, and we should do this again.
I would love to.